First of all, the webinar is being recorded. Playback will be available on the webinar page of the new GTLD microsite shortly after the conclusion of the session, including the presentation that we go through today. We will have a question and answer period at the end of the presentation. You may ask your questions by phone or through Adobe Connect. Phone questions will be given priority, and questions submitted online will be answered as time permits. The numbers are listed there on the left, and international numbers can be found on the webinar page. You've probably noticed that there's no chat pod. If you experience any issues with Adobe Connect, audio problems, or you can't see the presentation, please tell us through the questions and comments pod. You can find the pod there beneath the note box. You will only be able to see the questions that you put in. You will not be able to see what anyone else submits. But we will be monitoring this box, and we will filter out any duplicate questions. So if you have a question, send it in. And if you're experiencing any problems with Adobe Connect, tell us there too. And again, questions in this pod will only be addressed as time permits. Questions from the phone will be given priority. The agenda we're going to go through today, we will first talk about sector maturity. Fadi Shahadi, President and CEO, will be going through that. Then Akram Atala will be talking about applicant commitments, followed by closed generics. And then Christine Ouellette will talk about the monthly status update. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to ICANN's President and CEO, Fadi Shahadi.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad I could join you today. I wanted to start today's call by sharing with you some of the important macro developments going on in the whole new GTLD program. Specifically, I would like to start by sharing with you that we have been holding a series of CEO roundtables that address some of the important developments and matters that affect all the people involved in the GTLD sector. Yesterday, for example, I had a whole day with the leaders of the registries, and we had excellent discussions all day, and I'll be posting shortly after this call on my blog information about what we discussed and the things that came up. But I'd like to share some of this with you directly so you are appreciative of the context that I'm discussing with the CEOs. I do believe that the advent of the new GTLDs is going to create an inflection point for our industry. There's going to be a lot of change, and we all know that this is going to happen very shortly here in the middle of this year. And as these new GTLDs get released, the market will see a significant change in the service that we offer and the capabilities and the innovation that are available. So that's one mega change that is coming. The second one, which is a little bit out of our control, is the fact that on a global geopolitical level, the politics of the Internet are rising. If you haven't seen the piece in The Economist in the last month about the politics of the Internet, I suggest you do take a look at it. It gives you a sense of how the world is starting to think about Internet governance in different ways. This was obviously precipitated by the Wicket and the events in Dubai last year when nearly 100 countries nearly voted to move the management of the critical resources of the Internet to the United Nations. This was a very seminal moment and a very pivotal and, frankly, quite a dangerous moment where we saw the world struggling to figure out how to manage the Internet. This is accentuated by many of the interchanges I'm having with people in senior government levels here in the U.S., but also around the world in Europe and other places, where we are seeing clearly the question of Internet governance on the table and people trying to figure out how governments could start, frankly, governing us. Something that I think we would all agree is going to be dependent on how well we govern ourselves. There is ample historical precedent that when industries and sectors step up their maturity and step up their ability to govern themselves, that governments take note of that and really work in that context as opposed to step in to govern certain sectors. I have shared with the CEOs who came to the roundtable so far, and I have a few more roundtables coming up, some important data that ICANN has commissioned and studies that show that the reputation of our sector right now is four times worse than the reputation of the IT and technology sector. These are studies that have been commissioned by ECHO, the leading reputational analysis firm in the world. These are things that worry me and, frankly, things that bring up to those who wish to, frankly, tighten the government noose on us. It brings up questions that I face every time I meet them. So if I couple the opportunity of the new DTLDs with the rising temperature of Internet governance in geopolitical circles and government circles, I believe that it is time for us to bring our industry to a new level of maturity. And this is the reason I've been meeting with our leaders. So the registrar's leaders, as you know from my blog, came over here in January. Yesterday we had the registries, and I'm heading to Europe to also meet with more leaders of our industry from the CC side, the ISPs, and many more, as I would like to make sure that I listen to all our stakeholders and I share with them my views on how we can advance our lot together. Now, how do we do this? How do we do this? How do we mature our industry and prepare it for the next stage? I think it's a combination of two elements. The first element, which I think is a very important element, is to start positively letting the world know, as a sector, that the DNS brings value to the world, that the DNS is important to innovation, that the DNS offers opportunity. We need to raise awareness of the value that new DTLDs will bring. We need to bring good case studies and stories of what we can do, and we need to do this in a proactive way. We cannot let the world define us. It is time that we go out and define the value we bring to the world. And this has been a key discussion component with a lot of our leaders in these roundtables and even with some of many of you when I was in Amsterdam. So that's one side of it, and we have a series of ideas that we are putting on the table and discussing on how to raise the profile of our sector, how to inject positive information, good information about what we bring, and how to do it in a structured way at a global level. The second element of maturing our sector is to ensure that the business and legal framework of our sector is ready for the changes brought about by the two elements I discussed, the new GTLDs as well as the increased focus on government governing us. So how do we do that? How do we mature our business and legal framework? Well, there are a couple of things. For example, we need to come up with ways, industry-led ways, in other words, ways led by you, our contracted parties, to actually maybe identify good practices. How do we recognize that a registrar is adhering to good practices in the industry? How do we recognize that the registry has good practices? And how do we do that and really promote that? Other things we can do is step up as a group and agree on some common rights and responsibilities of the registrant. We are hoping to label something like this as part of packaging it and taking it to the world as a registrant's Bill of Rights, maybe. Something, again, that shows focus and commitment to serving our customers, really are the people who come to our sector for services. We also need to think of ways to make sure that there is a level playing field, that all the people playing in the sector, as much as we can, are working off of the same contractual frameworks. That's not an easy thing to do in an environment where, as I'm learning and I'm new here, as you know, we have a lot of different parties on different contracts, and we do not have a mechanism to create a level playing field, which I think is the right thing to do. So, again, as I'm covering very quickly a large number of both opportunities as well as responsibilities that we all need to embrace, I want you to know that I have made the decision that we will move forward with all these things in anticipation of the new GTLD releases that will start happening mid-year. I do not want to wait till past that. We have an opportunity, all of us now, to actually embrace these changes and move forward rapidly to a more organized, to a more structured, to a more mature sector that I can then defend with strength using my pulpit, my office, and my engagement around the globe to actually make sure people understand we are a mature, responsible industry and we will take care of ourselves. Now, in conclusion, and before I ask Akram to go into some detail on how we're going to do some of these things, I want to comment on my comments in Amsterdam. I think many of you were there, and if you weren't there, you have read online that I had a very frank discussion and presentation with you, with many members of our community. Let me be very clear on one thing. Whilst we are doing everything we can to stick to our schedule, we will not jeopardize the stability of the DNS. So, while on one side I am focused on getting the new GTLD program on track, and all of us are investing everything we can so that the promises we made that by mid-year we will have new GTLDs delegated and operational, we are committed to that timeline. Having said that, I will also not cut any corners on the stability, on the resiliency of the DNS, which is my core responsibility. And to those who would like to see that program delayed for whatever reason, I want to be clear. It is very important for the relevance of the DNS. It is very important for innovation. It is very important for the public that relies on us to get our work done, to get the new GTLDs out to market. So these two key responsibilities are being balanced very carefully by a superb team here at ICANN that we have assembled, and that commitment will not go away. And I will continue communicating this in the days ahead, so it's very clear that whilst I said in Amsterdam that if all things were equal, I'd like more time, and that is true, that I did not say, and I do not say today, that I'm backing off our commitments, which is what I clearly stated in Amsterdam. We are committed, and we will not change our timelines, but never at the expense of the stability of the DNS. With this, I'm going to ask my colleague, Akram Atala, to walk you through some of the commitments we're asking our applicants to embrace and to look at. This is important. And again, as I said, there is another side to the commitments, and that's the positive things that I am working on that allow us to promote our sector. We will not go through these today, but these are the subject of a lot of roundtables that I'm holding, and hopefully in mid-April we plan to start announcing some of these other very, very positive things for the GTLD sector. Akram?
Thank you, Fadi, and hello, everyone. I won't say good morning since we're all over the place. So thank you for joining us for this webinar. Very quickly, I'm going to go over some of the things that Fadi mentioned that we are including in the new registry agreement, as well as what we are calling the Public Interest Commitments Pact, or what we're going to be dubbing the PICS Pact, which will be added to the agreement. So let me walk you through the PICS Pact to begin with. We had a communique from the GAC that actually said that there are a lot of commitments in the application, but they are not binding. So they wanted us to figure out a way to make the entire application binding and enforceable. We looked at that, and we believe that it's not feasible to take some statements that are aspirational, some business plans, all of these things that are in the application and make them commitments and binding obligations. So we were trying to devise a way around that. And we have a proposal that we are putting up for public comment today that will hopefully meet the needs of the government as well as the applicants that want to make these commitments clear and make them binding so that they can move on with their applications while not forcing that on everybody. So the solution we're proposing is actually has three things. The spec that we're going to put together has three things on it. The first thing, and that's a mandatory thing, is an obligation to only use registrars under the 2013 RAA. As Fadi mentioned earlier, we are already in negotiations with the registrars on a new RAA. This new RAA meets a lot of the requirements of law enforcement, meets a lot of the requirements of the community, and improves the relationships between the registrants and the registrars, and therefore improves our entire sector. We want to make sure that we don't enter into the new GTLD space with some parties meeting these requirements and other parties not meeting these requirements. So we want to have an equal playing field. Therefore, we want everybody to sign to all the registrars participating in the new GTLD. We would like to have them sign the new RAA. So that's the first item, and that's a mandatory item. The second and the third item talk to obligations or commitments that an applicant would like to make clear that are in the application or have risen from early warnings or some complaints or comments from the community about their application. So it's not a mandatory, they're not mandatory items, but they are but optional, that allow you to make any commitment that you want to make binding very clear for everybody to see. So in option two, you can choose a question or a section in your application that's already there, and you can say that you are committing to make this a binding obligation. Or multiple sections, actually. The third option, just in case you want to make a commitment that's already in the application, but it's aspirational at best, or it has language that's not very clear and you want to make it more crisp, you can actually enter it there. Or if you have some new commitment that you want to make, you can enter it there. So two is to pick some sections and say, I'm committing to these. Three is to add crisp language in there that says, these are my commitments. And two and three are optional for the applicants. So we're hoping that this solution actually meets everybody's concerns and gets everybody on the same page moving forward so that we can move forward with the application. Now, how are we implementing this? If we go to the next slide, please. So what we're doing is we're trying to be mindful of the public comment as well as not delaying the program. So what we're doing is we're putting both the PIC spec as well as the new registry agreement, and I'll talk about that after this slide. And we're asking the applicants that want to make commitments to start making these commitments as soon as they can. So in a parallel path, we have the these things on the web for public comment and allowing you to make your commitments so that by March 5th, we can collect all of the PIC specs and summarize them and post them also for comment on for the community to see. And this all will happen before the Beijing meeting. In parallel, we will collect the public comments on 26th of February. We will open the reply period, and that will finish on 20th of March. If all goes well, that will not affect our schedule, and that's really our plan. And we will take question on that. I'm sure that there are a lot of you know, questions on how this is going to work and what we're going to do there and all of that. But it is very important for us to do this in parallel and allow the applicants to mitigate the risk or decide not to mitigate the risk and move forward without delaying the program. So that's how we're setting this. And we're hoping to actually answer any questions and get this done without any delay. Moving to the next slide. Okay. Oh, here we go. So the compliance with the PIC spec, third parties, so ICANN cannot be involved when we have 1,500 applications. We cannot be involved in enforcing every one of these PIC specs. So what we're going to do, we're going to allow the third parties that feel like the applicant is not meeting their commitments in the PIC spec to actually use the dispute resolution process to address any non-compliance. And this is for options 2 and 3 in the PIC spec. This will be incorporated into the approved dispute resolution procedures, the RRDRP, and post-delegation trademark PDDRP disputes. So we're not reinventing a new process. We're going to leverage what we already have. And a key function of that is, if you recall, we've added a conciliation phase. So hopefully we won't have to go immediately to arbitration, but we will go through a conciliation phase first and facilitate getting a resolution early on. So that's how we're going to actually implement the process, and that's the plan for the compliance on that and how we're going to be able to enforce the commitments in the PIC spec. Next, please. Okay, moving on to the key registry agreement changes. So in the agreement, there are two sets of changes, what we're calling the key registry agreement changes and also a set of bookkeeping, clearing, and cleaning some issues that have been brought to our attention, some clarifications and things like that. All of these things are outlined in an addendum to the posting that outlines every single change. There will also be a new registry agreement with red lines, as well as a finished version for you to look at and comment on. In addition to the cleaning up of the agreement and fixing some of the typos and issues that are in there, we have four key changes that we want to bring to your attention. The first one, of course, is the public interest commitment spec that we just talked about, including the 2013 RAA obligation. Number two is the implementation of the recommendation of the expert working group on the new GTLD directory services, if approved by the board, following the public comment, so long as the implementation is commercially reasonable. So if there are any things that come out of the working group that affect registries, we expect the new registries to comply with these. Number three is the any time there is an assignment of the registry to a new party, we want to have flexibility for both registries and ICANN to ensure that we will be able to protect the public interest by making sure that the same due diligence that we did in the application process, in vetting the ownership, in making sure that the operations is well taken care of and all of that by the new assignee, we have the ability to do that. But also we don't want to be very difficult in that, so we're saying something along the lines that providing the flexibility, meaning that if somebody's already a TLD owner and you're assigning that to them, that they've already cleared everything, then maybe we don't need to do all of this due diligence again. But if it's a new party that we haven't dealt with, that we can actually do the due diligence that we've done for you as an applicant. So making sure that we don't get into a situation where the applicants are all good applicants, they all get their new GTLDs, and then they sell or they transfer their TLDs to a new assignee, but we haven't vetted them, and that will look very bad for a responsible industry. So that's number three. And number four is to allow for amendment of registry agreement based upon board approval reached after public comment. So this clause is also something that we believe is needed for a responsible industry that's going through a lot of changes, not the least of which is we're moving down the path to a vertical integration era, and we don't know how that's going to affect the market. There might be some new changes that we need to make, and of course it's not a staff issue, but it is a community and a board issue that if it gets approved and by the board and the community, that we can actually ratify the agreement or move into a new agreement to reflect these changes. So we believe these are good housekeeping clauses that should be in every contract. These are not unusual, and you all know have contracts, and you will see that these are very reasonable requests to add for us to show how we are as a community very responsible and taking the public interest to heart as we move forward with the new GTLD. So that's pretty much all I have, but on these issues, I will talk a little bit about the closed generics issue, and we will take questions after that on all of these. Okay, on the closed generics, we had a board workshop the last weekend, and here in LA, and the GTLD committee reviewed the closed generic issue. We are posting it for public comment to see what the community would like to do with this issue. And then we are going to come back to the new GTLD committee after the end of the public comment period and come back with a proposal and recommendation on how to move forward. So please read the concerns that are there, and let's hear your comments on that so that we can also move forward on that without delaying the program. We keep getting these issues come up, and we are trying to manage them in a way that is transparent, but also without delaying the program. And as you can see, everything we're doing is in that spirit, as Fadi mentioned earlier. So before we take any questions, I'd like to ask Fadi if he wants to add anything, and then we move into the question. Fadi, please.
Yeah, just to comment on your closed generics announcement and the work that the board committee did. Let me be super clear one more time. We do not anticipate right now any delay in our projected dates for the new GTLD program. We are working, we're doubling our efforts, we're working hard, we're not cutting corners, we're just doing the work that you expect us to do. But the dates of the new GTLD program, as discussed in Toronto, right now are on track. If anything, I'm pushing for us to be ahead of schedule. But we are not delayed. I want to be very clear. And the schedule that Akram showed is a tough schedule. It means all of us, not just ICANN, have to work hard to stay on track. So this is very important. It's not just about ICANN and us doing our best. It's the whole community coming together, understanding these are tough deadlines, these are tough dates, but we together can make this happen and get this program out into the world to serve the communities that need it to create the innovation that we all want to make happen. So that's my commitment. And again, I invite you to join me in that commitment so that we can stay on track. With this, I'm going to hand it to our team to see if they want to open it for some Q&A, understanding that Christine still has her update to present on the progress with the GTLD program in general.
Thank you, Fadi. Thank you, Akram. So as we've done in the previous two webinars, what we're going to do now is request questions to come over the phone line. We will be taking questions via phone with preference to those calls, and then we will answer questions that have been submitted into the question pod, which is being monitored. So I would ask the operator, do we have anyone on the line with a question?
Yes, thank you. The first question will be coming from Craig Schwartz from LUTD. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Fadi and Akram. Thanks for the update. Can you guys hear okay?
Yes, thank you.
So I'm wondering with the outlined PIC spec, what's the relationship between that and Section 2.18 of the registry agreement that speaks to community TLDs and the commitments that they've made? How does the PIC spec relate to today's discussion and community commitments?
So, hi, Craig. The PIC spec actually, we understand that Section 1.8, I guess, is where a lot of the commitments were made. But if you are a community, that does not apply to the PIC spec. As a community, you've actually made your binding commitments in that section. So that is different than if you are not a community. And most of the applications are not community applications, and therefore a lot of their aspirations and commitments that are put in there are not binding. And that's where the concern has been coming from the GAC and other parts of the community to make these commitments binding. So unlike the community applications where these things are binding, the rest of the applications are not. And so for the applicants that feel like they're ready to commit to these things to mitigate some of the risks that governments might add to their applications, we're offering this as a way for them to make these binding commitments. Does that clarify your question?
It does. Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Charles Gomez from Verizon. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Fadi and Akram, for the good presentations. I have a question, Akram, about the ability of the board to amend the contract. Do I understand that correctly, that after public comment, the board would be able to unilaterally change the registry agreement? Is that correct?
Yes, the idea, Chuck, is that there will be a lot of areas where we would have to go through before this comes to the board, a lot of checks, if you want, before we can go to the board with that. But the idea is that if there is a major change in the market that requires us as a community to sign up for something new, that we all come together and we do it together, and then the board ratifies it, and then we will, everybody will have to follow that that new change to the agreement.
So you said it sounded like you were referring to more happening than just public comment. Did I understand you correctly?
Just one second. Let me check with our legal folks who are working on this. Just one second.
Thank you. Meanwhile, if anybody else would like to ask a question, you may press the star followed by the one on your telephone. And to remove the request, please press the star followed by the two.
Okay. Chuck, I'm consulting with my legal team, and the answer is so long that I don't think we should actually try to address it here. The agreement will be posted today. Please look at it. And if you have any concerns, we're all available here to actually take concerns via the phone or through the public, as well as through the public comment period. But we are here to answer any questions as well.
Thank you, Akram. Obviously, as you already know, and as the legal team knows, current registry agreements include an emergency clause where changes can be made on a short-term basis. It sounds like this is different than that, and I'll look forward to reading the agreement and asking questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you. If anybody else would like to ask a question, you may now press the star followed by the one on your telephone. And to remove the request, please press the star followed by the two.
Here we have a couple of questions that have come in online. From Henriette. PIC close public comment reply period closing on 20th March. What if there is a delay, and what happens to the timeline?
Well, our intention is that we believe that this is a solution that we've vetted already with some of the governments, and I think that the solution is workable. The board has seen that. We're expecting that actually this is a good solution for all parties to actually come together around. If there is a delay, then and we have all the PIC specs from everybody, then we will not be able to use them if the solution is not expected, and we will have to move forward based on that, and we'll have to decide that. But again, our timeline is to try to offer a solution that will not affect the program or delay the program. If we are faced with an acceptance of the solution, then we have to decide then whether we need another solution or we can move forward with the program without that solution. Remember that these are the two, number two and number three, are optional commitments. They're not mandatory. And the number one will be in the contract. So basically, if the PIC spec solution is not accepted by the community, then we have always the option to not agree to these commitments, and therefore we can move forward, or we can find a different solution. So these are the options that we have in front of us.
Thank you. If any of the audio participants would like to ask a question, you may press the star followed by the one on your telephone. And to remove the request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received, and there may be a short pause whilst participants register for a question.
So we have a few more questions that have been submitted to the pod. First question from guest 1000. What is the standing needed for a third party to complain about a bilateral contract between a registry operator and ICANN? I'm going to read this again. What is the standing needed for a third party to complain about a bilateral contract between registry operator and ICANN?
Christine Stan from Legal. One, we're trying to figure out if the question is about a proposed contract that ICANN might enter with a third party and whether with a registry and whether a third party could object to that contract, or is it about later compliance with the contract? And so we're not clear on the question.
So I think we may need to get some clarification on this.
Thank you. Meanwhile, there's an audio question coming from Marlo Burke from Barrowind Partners. Please go ahead.
From Fairwinds Partners. I wanted to know, what is the substance of the closed generic comment period that will open today? Could you explain further details on what issue is at hand?
So closed generics is actually a we received a few letters from the community as well as from other parties that have had concerns about the labels of generic applications being closed registries, and so the label is closed generics. The problem with explaining this is that we have no definition for either closed or generics in our policy. So I can't provide more explanations than what they mean. Basically, the gist of the complaint is that a generic name should not be a closed registry, but an open registry. So these complaints have been coming, from a lot of different sides that the GTLD. The board GTLD committee decided to review them, and therefore we put the public comment period up, and we have explanations on what the complaint is about, and we would like to see the temperature of the community about this issue and then formulate some kind of a proposed resolution for the issue. So that's where we're at. The actual documentation in the public comment is self-explanatory, so if you read it, you'll be able to understand what the issue at hand is. I hope that answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Akram.
We could go back to the question on the third-party objection. This is John Jeffrey. If we go back to that and we assume that that question was relating to the PIC spec, then the purpose of a third-party objection would be to allow parties that are interested or affected by, the criteria that was promised by the applicant, then there would be a position for that third party who's impacted by that to be able to file an objection through a dispute resolution process. It would not be intended to be anyone but those that would be directly impacted. So there would be some standing requirement that would make it more than a frivolous complaint.
Thank you, John. Guest 1000, if you have further questions on that or if that doesn't address your specific question, please feel free to put another question into the pod. Moving on to a question posed by Jim Prendergast. The notes released from the January 10 new GTLD board committee allude to the potential for requiring applicants to comply with the registrant bill of rights. Is that still on the table, or did the PIC cover this? If on the table, can you explain what this is? Where can I find it? If it doesn't exist, how will it be developed?
So the restaurant bill of rights is actually a different requirement than the pick spec. And the reason it is a different requirement is that the pick spec is going into the registry agreement. The restaurant bill of rights would be with the parties that are actually touching the restaurant, and that would be more the registrars. So right now we are actually talking about the registry agreement, and the pick is for the registry agreement and not the RAA, which as you all know, we are in negotiation on that, and we have a meeting tomorrow here in LA with the registrars to try to conclude our RAA negotiations and hopefully get to a RAA that we can post shortly for the community to see. So these are two different issues, not linked other than the new RAA, whatever it has in it. The registries will have to work with only these registrars, and therefore that closes the loop on our commitment as a community to make sure that we do everything right at all levels of the chain that touch the restaurant. I hope that clarifies. Thanks.
Thank you, Akram. A question from Alexander at Doc Gay. Regarding commitments, does that mean that applicants are allowed to do, in quotes, significant changes to their application in order to create commitments?
So remember, this is not changing the application. We didn't want to get into a change request to the application where, you know, we will have to deal with reviewing all the applications again and doing all of that. The application is really independent of doing the pick spec. We're providing two options. One is to pick something from the application and say, I'm committing to this, or multiple things within the application and say, I'm going to make all these commitments in these sections binding for me as an applicant, or to add crisp language that says, these are the commitments that I'm going to hold myself bound to in my agreement. And these are independent of the application. So there will be no change to the existing application by adding the pick spec, other than the pick spec is attached to the agreement as another specification that makes it in, binding and enforceable.
Question from Donna Austin. How does the RA, I'm assuming registry agreement, affect contract negotiation versus standard form contract?
So thank you, Donna, for the question. I'm trying to figure out how to answer it without creating more confusion. As we mentioned before, we want to have a standard contract that everybody can agree to. This is still our goal. We want to have a standard contract that applicants can sign on to without having to do negotiations, so that they can speed up their applications process and move quickly from contracting negotiations to pre-delegation testing. Having said that, the PIC spec will be something that they might want to if they don't use any of the options in the PIC spec, then it's really that would be your standard agreement. If they add some things to the PIC spec, then it will remain to be seen whether we need to actually make sure that the language that's in there is workable or not. But at the end of the day, these are not the specifications that you add, and the commitments that you add in the PIC spec are not something that you're agreeing with ICANN on. These are commitments that you are making to the community, to the government, to everybody that can object to your application. They are not agreements that you're making with ICANN. So we believe that the PIC spec will not will not delay your negotiations. And I'll ask John to clarify a little bit.
Yeah, I just had a few points. I think it definitely is part of the agreement. So the public interest commitments are promises or commitments that are going to be made by the applicants, often to respond to the public comments or the government concerns that have been expressed through early warning or through GAC advice that may come. So it's an opportunity for the applicants where they weren't making commitments because of the way the application was set up to be able to formalize those commitments that they've either already put in their application or wish that they had now that they've received these public comments. So it presents an opportunity for them. It does become part of the agreement. It'll be attached as an attachment to the agreement, and it will become binding, but it's enforceable through this third-party process. So we're allowing third parties to bring third parties that are affected to be able to bring these claims, and then based upon the outcome of that dispute resolution process, ICANN will enforce that third-party dispute resolution result. There will be no negotiations, though, on the public interest commitments. So these are the applicants, your commitments to the public about what you wish to be bound by in the agreement. But it is definitely related to the agreement, just to be very clear, and it is enforceable once we've gone through the dispute resolution process.
We have a couple of questions about closed generics that I'll group together. One from Melissa Varill with, what is the substance of the closed generic comment period that will open today? Could you explain further? And then concerning closed generics, David Taylor says, concerning closed generics in the planned public comment period, when will it be opened and closed?
So the comment period on the closed generics is 30 days. It will open today and close in 30 days. Again, I think that the it's self-explanatory. If you read the public comment posting, you will understand the issue and you'll be able to comment on it. If you can understand the definition of generic, then closed means basically that it is not open for everyone to register in the registry. If you tie the two together, you can figure out what this statement means. And the community really feels that, or the not the community, the objections or the concerns that are coming based on the idea that closed generics in particular should be open and should not be allowed. So that's really what the request is. And the public comment is to see what the community feels about this before we start working on proposing something to remedy this, okay? I hope this clarifies it, but it's not more complicated than that. So thank you.
So we're reviewing questions here. I have just a couple of more that are relevant to the PIC, but applicant commitments, et cetera, and then we'll move on to the status presentation. We have received some other questions about status and some things that will be covered then. I will defer, and we'll cover them after status is presented. Question from Volker Greiman. Is ICANN aware that by including a requirement for the 2013 RAA in their registry agreements, they will not only disincentivize registrars from adopting the new GTLDs, but also severely impede the new registry's ability to compete against the incumbent GTLDs? So I think that is a question, a comment rather than a question. and an opinion. We're aware of that perspective. Another question from user FWH. Perhaps we've covered this already. Do you mean a generic word with no trademark ownership, i.e., something like .shopping, which is a true generic with no possible single owner, or something like Apple, which is generic but also has a single or reasonably obvious majority claimant to the mark?
Thank you for the question, and this is exactly why we post the public comment, is to clarify these things and so that the community can come back with their opinion on the entire entire issue, so we're not addressing one thing versus all these concerns. So you hit it right on the head. That's why it's not a simple question. It is a little bit more complicated than that. Thanks.
And one last question from Peter LaMantia. How will applicant pick spec commitments affect pass-fail of the application?
So the pick specs have nothing to do with the pass-fail of the application. The reason we're adding the pick spec is so that to allow the applicant in areas where they are making commitments that they would like them to be binding on them to make them binding. That's really all the PIC is going to do. And the PIC would not affect your IE results per se.
So we're going to wrap up this portion of the webinar, and we're going to segue into the monthly status. But before we do that, Fadi will be making a few final comments.
I just want to say that in closing on the presentation of the public interest commitments, that some of you may be feeling this is a lot of new things at this point. But I want really to draw on our collective commitment to make this industry work well, to make this sector shine, to make us ready for a new season of growth and of innovation. So I'm appealing to all of you to look at the things we put in front of you with a new and frankly mature eye that says, yes, these things may have an impact on what we thought or how we thought this would all work. But in the overall picture, do these things help us navigate into a larger global industry, a larger global sector that other players that could have an impact on us would view these steps as steps in the right direction to make our industry more mature and more responsible? So I urge you, all of you, and I have done that with many of the CEOs and leaders that I have met in the last few weeks, I urge us to rise above some of our unique or individual issues or lenses and try to see the bigger picture here that is necessary for us to defend the work we all do and to highlight the value we all bring in the months and years ahead. So with this, I'm going to hand it back to Christine. And again, I want to say something as Christine presents her update. The number one priority of this team is to land the new GTLD project safely, on time, without further glitches, with absolutely the highest quality of work between us and the community, with transparency. And so I intend to increase the volume of communications pertaining to the operational details of the new GTLD program. I will be attending these calls, and I will be with you addressing both the technical and political risks that I encounter and the decision points that drive us to do certain things. I will endeavor to explain, to the extent possible, the trade-offs and the various considerations so that we remain balanced during each implementation step of this program. You have my commitment to do that. We're managing this closely by the day, and we will be on time, and we will show the world that as an industry, we know how to do this together. So with this, I hand it back to Christine so we can get into some of the status updates. And thank you all for taking the time with me today.
Thank you so much, Fadi. We will now segue into the monthly status presentation. So I'll start with a brief update of activity for the program. So as many of the applicants know, January was a busy period. We began releasing clarifying questions, what we refer to as CQs, starting January 15th. We have been releasing clarifying questions for approximately 100 applications per week, and we're working to continue at that pace. In the first 3 weeks of releasing clarifying questions, approximately 95% of all applications received clarifying questions. So what that means, if anyone is unclear, is that only 5% of applications would have had a passing score from those relevant panels, the registry, financial, and technical and operations panels, out of those first 300 applications. So this is a much higher volume than we anticipated. In recent months, we've been looking at about an 80%, 70 to 80% CQ rate. But when you look across applications, some applications are receiving clarifying questions from one or more panels. But in total, if you look at the total set of applications, 95% have received those clarifying questions. So that is creating a lot of work for all of you as applicants, as well as for the team here. This volume has, as some of you may have seen, we have released some inconsistent clarifying questions to individual applicants or to portfolio applicants may have received clarifying questions which were inconsistent from one application to another. The primary reason for this is that we do have multiple firms performing these evaluations for the panels. And although we've been working for months now to ensure the consistency of activity, this is a manual evaluation. This is not an automated evaluation. And the consistency is something that we continue to work towards. We continue to operate a quality program. 15% of applications are being reviewed, have a secondary review within the financial and technical panels, as well as additional applications across all panels are getting a secondary or, in some cases, a tertiary review. Again, the focus is on consistency of evaluation, and consistency of clarifying questions. I want to assure you that even with this volume of questions, as applicants, you have then had questions for us. You are emailing the customer support center with questions, and we have moved aggressively to respond to any customer requests, CSE tickets, cases, emails that come in. If they are relevant and pertaining to clarifying questions, we are working to respond to those within 3 business days. That is our target. We are viewing these as the most highly critical and urgent requests because we are sensitive to the time frame that you're all trying to respond to us in. I will remind everyone that we did in November extend the CQ response time frame to 4 weeks. This was increased from 2 weeks. This is really the maximum allowable CQ response time frame that we can afford to manage into the schedule, and that would not jeopardize the ongoing existing program schedule. The idea is that by extending from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, not only does it give applicants the ability to respond to questions in a higher volume of questions, but also accounts for the holidays around the world and the fact that in various areas of the world there may be multiple days off within that four-week time frame. So extending this CQ response time frame further would jeopardize the overall time frame for the program. So we are getting that question consistently, and this has been a consistent response. So I understand that this is creating work for everyone, but this is the best we can do without jeopardizing the overall program schedule. Here we have the program status. I presented a similar slide last month on an update to initial evaluation. And the status columns have evolved over time as we move into additional phases of work. We're able to report on status at a more granular level. So a couple of key things here. You can see that in the not started column, we have nothing in the not started column, so all applications are an evaluation by all panels. Previously, we had two statuses. One was called in evaluation, and one was called in CQ. We've combined those into a single status column called pre-CQ evaluation. The reason being that now that we are releasing clarifying questions, this is the queue prior to releasing those clarifying questions to the applicants. However, we have added two new statuses, one pending CQ response, meaning these are the applications that have clarifying questions out to applicants for response, and then we have a new status called post-CQ evaluation. So after the clarifying question responses come back, the panels do further evaluation of those responses, leading us to the preliminary panel results. So this status report reflects the fact the major change is that all applications have been started by all panels, and you can now see very clearly those applications that are in the CQ response window. Since we began releasing clarifying questions on January 15th, we've got about another week and a half before all of those clarifying question responses are due back, and then you'll start seeing that number in post CQ evaluation grow. As you see, the dates are as reported in January. We're still working towards the March 23rd date to begin releasing initial evaluation results. Of much discussion last month and since has been the fact that we have moved the string similarity panel results have been delayed to March 1st. So we are still working towards that March 1st date. That is still the timeline. We are working actively with the vendor on this panel to make progress. I'm sure that I will get many more questions, but I want to be very clear. The issue here that we were concerned about is inconsistency of process, and we are working with the vendor to address those inconsistencies. We are trying to ensure that a consistent process for evaluating string similarity has been followed for every string for every applicant. And And we've asked the panel to do some additional work to ensure that these processes are consistent. So that is where we're at. We are still working with the panel towards that March 1st date. And as soon as we have further information, we will most definitely share that with all of you. Moving on to some information about the customer service center. As you see, we still have 13 withdrawals of applications. We're at 1,917 active applications. To date, there have been no objections filed. Change requests. We have received a total of 525 change requests. 483 have been approved and posted. These changes to applications are being updated to the microsite. And we have additional applications. 15 change requests are pending clarification or further information from the applicant, and 27 are in review and approval by ICANN. One note on change requests. We're in discussion about how we could improve the public posting page, as we call it, the website where these change requests are presented, so that the change requests are more visible and the data that has changed is more readily accessible. So that is a comment and a request that we've heard in the community, and we're working to see how we can make that happen. To date, month to date, meaning January, not just a few days into February, but for the month of January, 393 cases were created, a total of 1,088 cases were resolved, and at month end, 233 cases within the customer service center were still open. You can see a breakdown of those cases by type. You see that the highest percentage, 29%, were change requests. 22% were around the evaluation process in general. So this is not just for the month of January, but this is year-to-date or program-to-date breakdown of cases to the CSC. And you can also see the trending up at the top right about number of cases created versus resolved. So we're working to move in the right direction and improve our response time to requests and cases coming in. A few key project updates. The Trademark Clearinghouse, we're on target here. However, I do want to acknowledge we have not published the TMCH agreements. Although Fadi has, in his blogs and through other communications, we have posted a lot of information about the Trademark Clearinghouse agreements. We're still working with the providers to finalize versions of those agreements for publication. We'll also be working to finalize and publish the Sunrise and Claim Statement of Work this month. So those are rescheduled from January, but that is still on track for this month. Again, the TMCH has two parts, the validation system that Deloitte and IBM are working to provide for us, and then the that's still on track. We're working towards a February deliverable there, and then the TMCH database launch, the centralized database for the Trademark Clearinghouse, which ICANN is working with IBM to provide, and we are working towards an April date there. For the URS, work is on target to execute an agreement and announce the provider this month. There's work that the URS team is doing to finalize additional documentation around the URS. And then on an ongoing basis, the team will continue to engage with additional providers to develop readiness so that we can have more than one, possibly even three or four providers up and running for the URS. The eBorrow project, also on target. We are working on, the RFP work is completed, and we're working to finalize the provider selection and contracting this month. In April, there will be a workshop to be scheduled. As we have dates on that, we will publicize that. And then readiness testing go live, phased out between May and July. Pre-delegation testing is another project that the team is working on. This month, we expect to finalize the test specification. So this is the exact technical details of the pre-delegation test. As we finalize that, we will be publishing that for review. In March, we are anticipating kicking off a pre-delegation testing pilot with an April go-live for pre-delegation testing services. And I have one more slide I want to talk about on pre-delegation testing. As previously communicated, I believe we published a memo announcing that .se has been selected as the provider for pre-delegation testing, or as we started to call it here, we've coined another acronym, PDT. As I mentioned, the test specifications and templates will be coming soon, certainly before the March pilot. Right now, we're looking at a mid-March, a 2 to 3 week pilot from mid-March to early April. We're going to be soliciting participation in the pilot. It will be optional. We will be requesting participation in the coming week. If we have an overwhelming response, then we intend to randomly select applicants from those who have opted in. The intent is to select approximately 5 applications with different registry service providers. So we don't want 5 applications with all having the same back-end registry service provider, so we'll be looking for diversity there. More information will be coming on this in the next couple of weeks, but please be aware that there will be a fair amount of work for these pilot participants. There will be data to exchange, but we will be publishing all of that information and the requirements in the coming weeks. I would expect certainly by the end of February. So that is the status update for February, and we will go back into question mode, and I'll again ask the operator if we have anyone on the line waiting to ask questions. We'll take those first. If not, it appears we do not, then we can ask questions that have already been submitted into the pod. Okay, let's take a moment. Okay, it seems as though the questions are coming in to the operator.
Yes, the first question comes from Charles Gomez from Verizon. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Christine. A question I asked in Amsterdam at the registrar meeting was whether or not applicants would have an opportunity to test the Trademark Clearinghouse interface after it is finalized in April. And Akram had said that they'd try and get us a response in a couple weeks on that. Do we know an answer on that yet?
And by testing the interface, I think you're referring to the upload, some sort of API that would be available for the bulk upload of registrations. Is that correct?
Right. Not only just the upload, but the interface between registries, registrars, and the Trademark Clearinghouse. So we really want to be able to do some QA on that interface before strings go live. So the question is, will there be a facility for us to test the interfaces before strings go live?
Chuck, this is Akram. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear in Amsterdam. I believe there will be time for you to test the interface. What I want to get back to you is when will that be available before they open? There will be some registration and setting up your user ID, and all of that stuff has to happen before they open. And also, they have for bulk restaurants, not restaurants, bulk users of the interface, there will have to be a prepay, and so all of these things have to happen and be in place before you can start putting trademarks in the trademark clearinghouse. So that interface will be defined very, very soon. On the other side, we are actually talking to an existing registry that has not gone through the sunrise and claims period, and they might be interested to use this as a pilot also. So we might be able to facilitate that to further test the system as well. So there are some, hopefully, some good testing that will happen before we open it and allow everybody to also connect and do the right thing before we open the application period.
Thank you very much, Akram.
I think we have another call on the line.
Yes, the next question comes from Molly Burke from Barrow Wind Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Jennifer Goldberg. I have a question regarding the background screening questions received from the panel. Is it possible to receive an extension on that due date?
So, Jennifer, when we sent out questions on background screening, we requested response in a two-week time frame. There is not an explicit limit to that. However, please be aware that delays in responding could affect the release of initial evaluation results because the background screening panel will be processing and completing their background screening as they get this additional information in. So we requested a two-week turnaround time to keep to the schedule, so any delays potentially could affect the IE results. So it would be, your judgment, depending on your priority number, as to whether that's something that you want to risk.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question. What safeguards are in place regarding data protection? For example, when personal information is disclosed in the application process, is the information purged from the systems once the panel has finished evaluation?
So right now, the data is being stored in the two secured systems within ICANN, our Sugar CRM system that has very limited user access and is protected within the ICANN security framework. In terms of purging this data, right now, since all of the data is necessary for evaluation, we haven't looked at data purging. I haven't explored that personally, but I can look into that and determine what our policy is for data retention on private information. So thank you, Jennifer. I will look into that.
Looks like we don't have any more questions on the phone, so I'll be reading off some questions that have been submitted in the pod. First question is regarding the trademark clearinghouse, and it's from Valvanese. Will trademark holders be able to register trademarks in the clearinghouse at any time during the year?
Yeah, once the trademark clearinghouse is open, they'll be able to register trademarks at any time.
Thank you. Next question from Alex Stamos. What is the status of clarifying questions? Those of us who haven't heard anything are wondering if we have no questions or if we're still waiting.
So as of today, clarifying questions for the first 400 applications have been sent out. So there are a few applications from week to week which are getting delayed due to internal reviews. I mentioned that we do have this QC review, secondary review, tertiary review being done in-house. So occasionally there will be a handful of applications from week to week which are delayed. So last Wednesday, clarifying questions went out for generally 301 to applications priority number 301 to 400, with this exception of a handful of applications. So as the weeks go on, we are not holding these up more than 1 to 2 weeks. Also, to be very clear, the first week we released clarifying questions for the first 108 IDN applications, and at this time, all clarifying questions for all of the first 108 applications have been released. We have no clarifying questions being held back for those.
Thanks, Christine. Next question from Peter Green regarding string similarity of new GTODs. Can you please, can I tell the community the reason for its 4 previous delays?
So I think I've covered this, that the panel, we're working with the panel to ensure that a consistent process of evaluation has been followed for all strings, and we're making progress with this. With this panel, we're just really trying to ensure that any areas where there might have been inconsistency are going back, being looked at again to ensure that a consistent application and review has been conducted. So it's really for consistency purposes and process.
Thank you, Christine. It's a follow-up question on string similarity. I think you may have touched on this already. I'll just read it, and if you feel that it's been addressed, I'll move on. The question comes from Jim Pendergrass. The inconsistency issue with the vendor, is that because you discovered an inconsistency issue, or are you trying to get ahead of a potential problem?
So with the string similarity panel, as with all of our panels, we part of the process of them finalizing their work is to document for us their process and procedure that has been followed. And in that effort of reviewing the process, that is when we discovered that we had a concern about consistency. So I guess that would be we're trying to get ahead of a problem to ensure that if on the premise that if a consistent process is followed, that we could more readily rely on the results of the evaluation.
Thanks, Lisa. The next few questions are clarifications on one of your slides. What's MTD?
MTD month to date.
Thank you. And then on slide 16, the graph on slide 16, what are the blue and green bars?
So the blue and green bars reflect one is the cases opened per month, and the other is the cases closed per month. I don't have the slide in front of me. And if the legend isn't clear, we can make sure that before we post it that that legend is, I think perhaps the legend fell off at some point of the graph. We can add that back in.
Thank you. And then the next question is regarding the status slide. Are the 11 GOTODs in evaluation those currently without a support letter?
So I can't discuss any specific application, but in general, geographic applications would receive clarifying questions if their letters of support were insufficient to meet the requirements as per the AGB. So I think we have one call. Operator, if you put that through.
Yes, of course. And the next question comes from Amadou. Please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Christine. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello, Amadou.
Okay, hello. Sorry, I was trying to put the questions in the wrong conference. I arrived to an IPC conference with a different company, a conference company, though apparently there's no shortage of ICANN-related conference today. So I have a couple of questions here regarding the clarifying questions process. And I don't know whether I have to ask that here or through the CSC, but the question is, how does it work? We send an answer. For instance, most people are asked for a revised letter of credit. If a new letter of credit is sent, this will be reviewed during the 4 weeks' time, and anything that is still wrong would be told, or is a one-shot game? That is, we send a new one, and we will know by date of publication if it was correct or not. Do you understand what I'm asking? So is there any interplay during these 4 weeks of evaluation, or is just you get the question and you provide the answer, but there is no allowance for discussion with the evaluators?
So, Amadou, good question. The clarifying questions, the nature of them for the process is that it is a one opportunity clarifying question. So we're asking the applicants to respond to their best efforts to that clarifying question, and we are going to great lengths with the panel firms to, on the wording of those questions, to make them as clear as possible so that the applicants, you each have the opportunity to respond as successfully as possible to those questions. So from a scalability standpoint, we simply do not have the bandwidth to entertain an unlimited number of questions or to engage directly with each applicant on an iterative basis for their clarifying questions and still maintain the progress towards their timeline. You had another question about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So to clarify something that's been discussed in the community, there is no incentive on answering earlier, even if it's not complete, to get some feedback. And it's more incentive in taking your time to have the most correct possible answer the first time you send it. That's your answer, correct? But you don't mean interplay. So I think it's clear. I have a question, if I am allowed, because I was unable to call for Akram on his slides. Is it possible?
Yes. Go ahead, Amadou.
Okay. It was a slide with the four changes in the agreement, and one was about incorporating the outcome of the, directory services, public directory services expert group. But at that time, the Adobe Connect sound was cut, unless for me and some other people. And I don't know whether this corner of the slide meant that if the recommendations of this group comes, let's say, in April, they will be mandatory for the new agreement, or that in any case they will come as a later amendment or what really this meant for, let's say, the current status of, let's say, the who is a specification in the agreement.
Thank you, Amadeus. So this is actually we put that as a requirement because the working group is addressing this issue, and we believe that once they come out with their recommendations, we need to be able to get the board actually approve them, that we have to have a mechanism to get the registries, if they are affected by the outcome of the new directory services, to actually implement those. So it's a hold in the agreement to implement after the recommendations come out, the board approves them, and asks for the registry to implement them. They might actually, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be, to tell you the truth. We don't know if they're going to replace the current who is with some new recommendation, if there are going to be some additions to the current who is. We don't know the outcome, and we will have to work through it. But we have to have a commitment implemented. Otherwise, if this happens, 6 months from now, then we have to go and do a new agreement 6 months from now. That's going to be too much distraction. So we'd rather to actually include it in the current agreement that we're proposing and move forward. And we believe it's going to be, if the recommendations are not implementable, it's not going to be reasonable to expect the board to approve it. So it's going to be there's going to be public comment, there's going to be board approval, there's going to be a lot of steps before we're going to ask for implementation by the registry. I hope this addresses your concern.
Okay, thanks.
Operator, I think we have one more question on the line.
Yes, that's correct. The following question comes from Molly Burke from Borrowind Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, this is Melissa Varelli. I wanted to know when trademark holders can register trademarks in the Trademark Clearinghouse. Would you be able to register trademarks in February?
So the Trademark Clearinghouse registration system for trademark holders, the current timeline is a February release. So there will be an onboarding process. You'll have to register as a user, work through all of the agreements and prepayments, et cetera. And once you're a user of the Trademark Clearinghouse, then you'll be able to submit your marks for registration. So we are still working towards a February go-live date on that. I don't think we have anything else online on the phone. So do we have any other questions that came through the chat?
Yes, we do. Next question. We have a question regarding pre-delegation testing from Peter Green. Does a failure of pre-delegation test in the pilot affect one's normal testing, one's formal testing before delegation?
No. The pilot, if you were to participate in the pre-delegation pilot, whether success or failure, would not affect your need to go through the actual pre-delegation testing after your IE results are released and everything else is passed, contracting, et cetera. So it would not affect either favorably or negatively.
Interesting. Next question is regarding change requests. So regarding change requests, does an approved change request mean that no material change is detected?
There have been a variety of change requests, anything such as a phone number or a fax number change to stakeholder officer changes. We've had changes for attachments that were in error. So there have been a wide variety of changes. So it depends what you would consider to be material. I would say that there is, as per the guidebook, and I don't have the section number in front of me, the guidebook does state that material changes to an application could require reevaluation. So far, that has not occurred. We haven't needed to opt for a reevaluation of an application due to a change request. But given the timeline and the progress of evaluation, that could be foreseeable for a material substantive change being submitted going forward.
Thank you. Next question regarding Trademark Clearinghouse. What is the status of the Trademark Clearinghouse technical specifications?
I think that this might be referring to the Sunrise and Claims technical specifications. And let me see if I have information on that. You know what, I need to follow up and get more information. Do you know who submitted that question?
Yes, it was Jasmine Omer.
Okay. We can put something out in the weekly update to clarify the status on the TMCH specifications, and I expect that is referring to the Sunrise and Claims technical spec.
Thank you. Next question from Jim Prendergast. If an applicant has already received CQs, will they receive any more, or are they done?
We're attempting to get each application, to get all of the CQs for an application out in a single week. However, from panel to panel, we have had some issues come up during our review, which has forced us to hold those clarifying questions back. So you could see those questions come out in a second or a third week. But that is not the norm. So if multiple weeks go by and you don't see clarifying questions, then I would expect, if I were you, I'd anticipate I wouldn't be receiving clarifying questions.
Thanks, Kristen. And just to add on to that just a little bit, and that is we are releasing all CQs per panel. That means if you have already received CQs for a financial panel, you will not be receiving any additional financial-related CQs. Next question regarding withdrawals and refunds. After posting of applications and until posting of initial evaluation, there is a 70% refund for withdrawals. Is this a rolling deadline based on the draw number, or is this based on the March 23rd date?
So as what we've said previously is that as soon as the initial evaluation results for a specific application have been published, then that 70% refund rate no longer applies. But if you have application 1800 with the results being released sometime in August, that would be when your withdrawal percentage would change.
Thank you. Next question. Can ICANN please give an undertaking that the IDN variant issue will not erode sentiment of allowing for IDNs to be prioritized? This is more of a comment than a question.
So I think we are still working on the IDN applications as aggressively as possible. Any issues on IDN variants are not affecting our processing of applications.
Thanks, Christine. Have the members of the Directory Services Expert Group been named?
We don't believe that that has been announced, but we expect to be announcing that shortly.
Thank you. I just have one last question in the pod regarding the Trademark Clearinghouse. Can you please confirm that the Trademark Clearinghouse will have a bulk upload ability? And if so, can you confirm when this will be available and whether or not it will be a CSV upload or an API?
So, yes, there is intended to be a bulk upload. It will be available when all registrations are available. I do not know if it is a CSV or an API. I would need to follow up on that detail. But if that is part of the documentation we do anticipate publishing, so that will be clarified. We realize that there is a lot of communication necessary around TMCH that needs to get out and published. So I anticipate we'll be getting clarity around that this month.
Thank you, Christine. And Celia Blue from PIR, I see that you have submitted a question in the pod regarding an inquiry that you submitted to the CSC several days ago. So I'll address that with you offline. Apologies for the delay in responding.
So with that, we're going to wrap up early today. Thank you all for your patience and participation. Thank you for your questions. We're making significant progress for the program, and we have our next scheduled webinar, monthly status webinar, for March 5th, I believe at a different date and different time, which should be better for those of you in other parts of the world. So we will speak to you next month. Thank you all.